was very surprised to start reading the newspaper this past week about the plans to dig up the body of Lee Harvey Oswald at this time. There was a lawsuit placed in Texas by Michael Eddowes. He's a British writer who claims that there's only a 50-50 possibility that the body in the grave will be Lee Harvey Oswald. That suit was turned down because he was a British citizen. And finally, the suit went further into a higher court, and all of a sudden they said, yeah, we're going to dig him up on Friday. And of course, if you've had 16 or 17 years invested into this particular subject, the subject around who is Lee Harvey Oswald, as I have had, and spent as much time as I have collecting the information about the many Oswalds, you must know that I am very curious to see the outcome of this particular suit. It's hanging in the balance right now, and we'll go into that a little bit. Michael Eddowes is, say, a British author. He's a very illogical person. He's pursued this to the nth degree. He has the heights and measurements of the various Oswalds. He's correct on the different heights and weights and so forth through the years. He has a statement. He's published two books to the fact that if that body in the grave isn't Lee Harvey Oswald, then it must be a Russian agent. Now, that logic leaves me because they're going to look for a skeleton 17 years embalmed in a grave, and there's going to be bones and flesh, and maybe it will have a mastoid operation, and maybe it won't, and maybe the dental charts will match the marine dental chart, and maybe they won't. And if they don't, how will they know that the bones and skin thought KGB? I really haven't been able to figure that out yet. I know that when Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union, forget what he did in the Marines at the U-2 base in Japan and the Philippines, and when he came back in June of 62, he was only with 30 to 40 members of the Defense Department and the Central Intelligence Agency. But in the Soviet Union, he was with, this gentleman was named, or these were named in the book, Who's Who in the CIA, that was published in Europe and recognized as a pretty accurate book on CIA agents. Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet agent with Soviet Union with CIA agent John McVicker. He was with Richard Snyder of the Central Intelligence Agency. He was with Priscilla Johnson of the CIA. Marina Oswald, who was from a Tsarist family, who worked with Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, that operation. He was with Alexander Zeiger from Argentina, who worked directly with the Central Intelligence Agency, and I have documents on that. He was with Commander Hallett from the CIA and Navy Intelligence, who was a commander and serving in the embassy in the Soviet Union when Oswald arrived, and who also was the radio control man from the White House, who told Lyndon Johnson November 22, 1963, that Oswald was the assassin. Gary Powers, the pilot of the U-2 plane, the CIA operation, claims that Oswald had a part in downing the plane. Oswald was with agents of the CIA in Brussels, and of course, when he came home in New Orleans, Fort Worth, and Dallas. Reinhard Gehlen, who was chief of Hitler's Intelligence Eastern Division, working with James Angleton of the Eastern Division of the Central Intelligence Agency and John Paisley, who was murdered at the time of the House Select hearings, all worked with Lee and Marina Oswald, as did Robert Oswald, the man who's holding up the exhuming of the body at this time. Doubles is an important subject. Many people wondered when I decided to write my first book on the Kennedy assassination, and I have the outline of six books I want to write, why I chose doubles of all things to write about. And I felt that it was the key or the crux to the deception, what I call the historical magic that's played before our eyes. What if the Romanov family didn't perish in Russia and were allowed to leave the Soviet Union and in return for Lenin going back to Russia? There's many books on this. How did they affect the economy, the banks, the money, the investments they had in Siberia, Alaska, the Midwest? Where are the pretenders of the throne? Are they waiting in the sidelines? What if Adolf Hitler didn't die in the bunker? I've done tapes on Hitler, and I've done many radio shows and tapes on the Romanovs. What if he went to Argentina and Antarctica? Did he affect Argentine invasion policies, like going to Bolivia now or Brazil? No, he's not doing it now, but the network was set. Uruguay, Paraguay, Chile, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Costa Rica, Mexico. What if Hitler was very much alive with Martin Bormann and Joseph Mengele and Otto Skorzeny and all the others? What if Howard Hughes was murdered and buried in 1972, as the Gemstone file says, and I've written articles on that, and Vance Cooper was kept and buried in that unmarked grave in Texas? And what if Lee Harvey Oswald was allowed to leave Dallas, Texas, by the CIA, FBI, Navy intelligence, and flown to Boca Raton and then down to Brazil? What if that did happen? What if a double is paying his dues and his patsy? There were so many doubles of Lee Harvey Oswald in the Texas School Book Depository. There were three the day John Kennedy was killed, and also one did leave town, and we know one was dead. Earl Warren knew one was dead and buried because the minutes of the Warren Commission, this was January 21st, 1964, it was in January before they had one single witness testify before the Warren Commission. He brought up the minutes of the meeting under Roman numeral 2, item H. Everything is very systematic, the minutes of the meetings that came out of the National Archives. Chairman Earl Warren, who was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, brought up the subject. He says, let's talk about the remains of Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, that situation is that this man is buried in a cemetery, and it takes officers around the clock to watch him and see that they don't come in and exhume him and do something to further injure this country. So in order to save that expense, we should exhume him and cremate him. This was Earl Warren. And Richard Russell from Georgia said, do we have the jurisdiction to do that? And Earl Warren said, well, the question may arise as to something on that body now. I don't know what it was. Maybe it's the course of the bullet, and it could be something else. We shouldn't want it disposed until our report is made, so we'll seal it up, unknown to anybody. No one will know where it is. The wife would consent to it, and then they would cremate it shortly after they finished their report in September 1964. That's why Michael Eddo says there's a 50-50 chance that there may not even be a body in there, because the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court ordered the cremation of that body before a single witness was called, before the Warren report was written, or even the murder of John Kennedy was investigated. The Warren Commission got together, issued their report in September, but this was in January. My daughter's birthday, they had a meeting. Let's dispose of Lee Harvey Oswald. I have done past tapes in October 1977. I did one our cassette on a transfer of Lee Harvey Oswald in the jail, the use of doubles. I did another one in 1977 on exhuming Lee Harvey Oswald and these cremation orders more in detail. In January 79, I did another radio show, and these cassettes, as I say, are available. Exhume Lee Harvey Oswald going into the suit by Michael Eddowes, and another one in 79 on the Oswald double, namely Larry Crawford, who worked for Jack Ruby, for the National Security Agency, who was one of the Oswalds that got into Mr. Whaley's taxi cab. The Warren Commission thought, even on their own memos, they said, let's check out Larry Crawford, who worked for Jack Ruby, because he resembles Lee Harvey Oswald, and they thought he was in the taxi cab. Now, just recently, there was a new investigation into the murder of John Kennedy, and G. Robert Blakey was the chief counsel for the investigation. I quote him many times. He was asked about the possibility of exhuming Lee Harvey Oswald and what they would find, and I'll read you exactly what he said this week in case you didn't see it in the newspaper. He said, it is obscene to dig up Oswald while there is a second gunman at large. As I say, I've studied logic. I can't follow what Blakey means. It's obscene to go to one problem and find an empty coffin when another gunman is at large. So he's throwing out a double whammy here. The second gunman is around somewhere, and he thinks it's obscene to dig up Oswald. I should think it would be very reasonable to find out who's in Oswald's grave while they're looking for another gunman. As long as you're going, you may as well go for broke and look at every problem from the beginning, point A, and start all over. Now, because Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Earl Warren, began his commission meetings before the witnesses were called on destroying the remains that were in that coffin, because something there would embarrass this country. I hardly believe that Michael Eddowes' contention that it was a KGB man would serve Earl Warren's purposes. You'd have to say that the doctors that did the autopsy, that the doctors at Bethesda Hospital, that the Warren Commission, that Alan Dulles and James Angleton and the CIA and Lyndon Johnson were all KGB spies covering up a KGB agent, because if there's a national cover-up of the murder of the president and the Chief Justice is part of that conspiracy to destroy those remains before he even knows how many Oswalds there are, then either the entire government's run by Russia or the remains that are there or are not there belong to the Central Intelligence Agency and the Defense Department and not to the Soviet Union. Another illogical quotation this week, Melvin Belli, the attorney for Jack Ruby. Also, I've mentioned on other shows the attorney for Hell's Angels and for Nazi Gestapo member Errol Flynn and Mrs. Hermann Göring, the widow of Nazi Hermann Göring. Melvin Belli worked with the Warren Commission. He's the attorney that wouldn't let Jack Ruby on the stand to testify because he said Ruby might incriminate himself. Said this week when asked about the Oswald body, "I can't imagine Russians hiring Lee Harvey Oswald or Jack Ruby. They are not that dumb." Melvin Belli is right. The Russians aren't that dumb, but the United States government is that dumb. We've made every other blunder, and the fact that Ruby and Oswald were hired by the United States government is a truth. The fact that the Russians wouldn't touch him with a 10-foot pole is also true. Nobody in a Soviet jail would pass out a message such as Jack Ruby did. He sent out little pieces of paper pieced together and sold at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel, where the collector of autographs has a shop, saying that Lyndon Johnson was involved in the murder of John Kennedy. I doubt if any Russian in a Soviet jail would pass out a slip blaming the president or the head of Russia for a murder in Russia. They're not that dumb. The undertaker in Texas has also been quoted as saying the body should be in great condition because I gave it extra embalming fluid. Well, that's great. I don't know what extra is or how much, but they're going to have trouble getting to the grave also. Marguerite Oswald, she didn't testify. I think she did mention before the Warren Commission how her son was buried. That's right. She had an article in Life magazine, and she said they brought in, you know, this special grave. There was a special grave described by Mr. Thompson in Glendale, California, an engineer, and they poured tons of cement. Marguerite commented on the fact that my son is buried under tons of cement, and the Warren Commission was concerned that they had guards around the clock. He was indeed in a specially built coffin, and an article in the newspaper just this week regarding the exhuming of Oswald said they're having difficulty getting to the grave. He's buried in a special coffin, this is a direct quote, with steel around it. Thousands of pounds of cement. They should have said thousands and thousands of pounds of cement. He's put there so that nobody could ever get to that grave. Somebody must have anticipated this day. August 17, 1980, a quotation from Mr. Pittman, the attorney for Michael Eddowes. He has spent weeks working on a precise military-type operation to drill through a thick metal plate covering the Oswald grave, and then they have to chip through tons of concrete surrounding a vault and rush the coffin to the Institute of Forensic Scientists in Dallas, where a team of nationally recognized medical and dental experts is waiting for a verdict in this matter. Now, Errol Warren intimated that he had to suppress what he knew about the assassination of John Kennedy and lock the information in the National Archives for 75 years for national security. It could be that the people in Dallas, Texas, will be forced because of national security to cover up this story. They'll say at the time of the Iranian crisis and the hostages there and the world torn asunder with all these coups, we can't afford to embarrass the United States. If we couldn't afford to embarrass the United States in 1963, we're in much worse shape around the world right now than we were then. So it's much more difficult. Our credibility with our allies is down to zero, and our enemies are ganging up. so that national security will be mandatory if we don't want to look totally ridiculous. So the outcome of this decision, of course, depends upon the courts, and a lot of it's in the hands of Robert Oswald. Marina Oswald, the widow of Lee Harvey Oswald, said, go ahead and exhume the body, even though for myself I don't have to have proof of the identity. I chose this uneasy road. No matter which way it goes, you will be ridiculed. I don't know why she would be ridiculed if it's Lee Harvey Oswald, but Marina Oswald might be ridiculed if there's nobody in the grave or if it's not Lee Harvey Oswald. She says, through the years, there's more and more mystery surrounding the assassination. And she added, I didn't even get paid for exhuming document, the exhumation document, she added. This is quite a sacrifice for Marina Oswald. She was almost literally stuffing her bra with money from Earl Warren while she testified at the Warren Commission. He was really crazy about Marina, and she came out of the whole thing really very rich. So she has to offer this time. She isn't getting paid to sign the paper. But Marina has worked very, very closely with Robert Oswald ever since the day that John Kennedy was killed. Robert was receiving microdotted letters from Lee when Lee was in the Soviet Union. They both worked with the military intelligence. They stayed far away from Marguerite Oswald, the mother and the mother-in-law, because the minute Lee was arrested, she said, my son worked for the United States government. I want his name clear. He's an employee of the government. So Robert and Marina disassociated themselves from Marguerite because she was just pulling a Martha Mitchell and blabbing too much. Robert Oswald, as of this date, has blocked the order. Monday, we'll see what happens and go on from there. The attorney for Robert Oswald is a Kenneth Campbell, who works in the office of another party who represented Marina Oswald before. So there's a little conflict. Mr. William McKenzie is the law office that represented Marina Oswald after the assassinations, and Kenneth Campbell, the attorney for Robert Oswald, is a law partner of McKenzie. He came in after Marina didn't need the services of McKenzie anymore, but the two of them are using the same law office. As I said, Michael Eddowes says there's a contention, a 50-50 chance that the person buried in the grave is not Lee Harvey Oswald. What kind of work have I done on the investigation of the double Oswalds in the past 16 years? I've collected every document or piece of testimony or book, books and articles on the doubles, and put them into chronological order, and came out with a pattern of what I called Oswald 1 and Oswald 2, and who was providing the information when Lee Harvey Oswald was in one place. Other persons, 3 to 5 different people, I know of 5 particular ones, but they wove in and out, were impersonating Lee Harvey Oswald at the same time that he was in another city. And the purpose was to make a man named Lee Harvey Oswald the patsy for the assassination of the President of the United States in order for the escalation of the war in Vietnam, in order for Richard Nixon to become a president, the selected man since 1946. Oswald I worked in the Marines 3 years. He was trained in radar and electronics. He worked at the Atsugi Air Base in Japan and in the Philippines at the U-2 flight bases. As I say, he might have been responsible from the radio factory in Minsk with Alexander Zeiger, the CIA, of downing the U-2. Gary Powers made those statements that he thought Oswald was part of the responsibility of downing the plane, which broke up the Entente and the peace conferences of Khrushchev and Eisenhower at the time. Oswald I, the Lee Harvey Oswald, the agent of the government, was married. He had 2 children. He had been an FBI informer since 1962. His number or code number with the FBI was number 179. His agent CIA number, taken from documents from the National Archives, was 110669. He corresponded with Texas officials such as Senator John Tower, I've mentioned before, and he had contacts with oil engineers, the CIA, government security agents in New Orleans, and worked with Division 5 of the FBI. He was a super spy of high intelligence, skilled in language, photographic techniques. He had a new passport issued in June 1963 on 24-hour notice that he was going to split separately and his wife would take another passport. And he knew by June 63 that in November 63 or earlier, whenever Kennedy came to Dallas, they would be splitting. This Oswald was refined, intelligent. He was a serious student, a good vocabulary, good writing skills, an exceptional mind. And everything I have said to you can be documented, volume number and page number, and it will be in the book that I'm writing on Oswald and the doubles. Oswald, too, the impersonations, the various people that impersonated him, and in the book I'm writing, I'll have their names and where they were at these times, traveled in Mexico making anti-Kennedy statements. He visited the anti-Castro Cubans in Dallas, claiming that John Kennedy should be killed with Sylvia Odio and that group. He was noticeable in Illinois, where an assassination was to take place. He appeared at a furniture store in Dallas, Fort Worth. It was actually in Irving, Texas, shortly before the assassination, saying he was going to need money and furniture, and he had to have a gun shop. He was at a gun shop getting a scope attached to a long rifle. Oswald, the rifle that was planted, that was later placed to him, the Italian Carcano, had come with a scope on it. He tried cars at an agency to make a fast getaway. The other Oswald didn't drive a car. This Oswald doubles were obnoxious at a barber shop, brought along a young boy. They were trying to link him with a homosexual activity in the Irving, Dallas, Fort Worth area, and he talked about his Russian sympathies. And the Oswald doubles were shooting at rifle ranges, acting arrogant, making a bullseye, showing they were perfect marksmen. One of them was at Love Airfield, needing a quick airplane for a getaway. Another Oswald was working at Love Airfield, applied for a job the exact day that Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Texas School Book Depository. One cashed large checks at a grocery store in Irving, Texas. The other one didn't have those kind of checks or money coming in. The doubles were photographed in front of the Russian embassy in Mexico. One was that large, fat Oswald that is well known among the articles of the doubles, and one was obnoxious at the Cuban embassy in Mexico. Those were people impersonating the Oswald to create the story of a man who could shoot well, who had a good rifle, who traveled with homosexual companions, who was going to get a lot of furniture, who had a lot of money. He was at the rifle range. He was getting airplanes for getaways. These Oswalds were creating the personality that the Warren Commission selected to describe Lee Harvey Oswald. It was a very schizophrenic book. These 26 volumes that they printed were completely split down the middle. On the one hand, before the assassination took place, people that knew Lee Harvey Oswald in the service and at work, and the secretary that he went to type up his memos when he came home from the Soviet Union, was sure he worked for the intelligence community. A man at the printer lab at Jagger's Chili Stovel knew that he worked for the intelligence community. On the one hand, the government printed all the information on the Oswald, the agent. On the other hand, they printed the subterfuge. Now, as far as the Oswald doubles in the jail at the time of the assassination, I have an FBI report dated November 23, 1963. That was one day after John Kennedy was killed, and Oswald was interviewed by Special Agent Manning C. Clemens. And he saw him in the police department. Oswald was 5'9". He weighed 140 pounds. He had medium hair, blue-gray eyes, and they gave his Social Security number, his draft board number, and his armed services number. Several days later, November 26, 1963, this was exactly 3 days later, the Secret Service wrote up a report on Lee Harvey Oswald and their examinations in the Dallas jail. The FBI had him 5'9 on their report, November 23rd. When the Secret Service wrote up their report, he was 5'11". The FBI had 140 pounds. The Secret Service had 150 pounds. The FBI report had medium brown hair and the hair length, and the Secret Service report had receding hair and different description of the hair. So that Lee Harvey Oswald was examined and written up by two branches of the United States government in terms of height and weight. The reports were written several days apart, but he was examined by two different branches, and they turned in their reports, and they had two different people then. That will be in the book that I'm writing about the doubles, that there were three or more in the book depository. One, Lee Harvey Oswald left the back of the building, and James Worrell saw him And that's the witness they used before the Warren Commission to say he left the building and got onto a bus and into a cab and went to his rooming house. The other, Lee Harvey Oswald, left from the front of the Texas School Book Depository. When a car honked, he ran down the grassy knoll, got into a white station wagon, was seen by Sheriff Roger Craig, who then went to the police department in the afternoon and interviewed Oswald. And Oswald said, yes, that was me. I got into the station wagon. It belongs to the Paines, but leave them out of it. I don't want to get them involved. The whole chronology of the days of Lee Harvey Oswald, from the moment John Kennedy was shot until Oswald was shot, I wrote for Irving Wallace in People's Almanac number 2. If you have that book or get it, it's a paperback. There is that chronology in there that I did for Irving Wallace and Lee Harvey Oswald with those direct quotations. Sheriff Craig is dead. James Worrell is dead. The cab driver is dead. Mr. Whaley is dead. The rooming house lady, Earlene Roberts, was killed. And the bus driver, the cab driver, all the major witnesses to the doubles of Lee Harvey Oswald, the Oswald or the double, are dead. Now, what will they find in that grave in Dallas? I'm not sure. I would be very surprised if they pull out a body and say the teeth are perfect, the body has had the mastoid operation, there was some injury to the bone. There were certain things about Lee Harvey Oswald that were distinctive, that were not on the body when the autopsy was done. The fingerprints were questionable at the autopsy, and I have this all into the book that I'm doing on the Oswald doubles. I think that Michael Eddowes is on the right track for the wrong reasons. He thinks that if it isn't Oswald, then it has to be a KGB Russian plot. I don't think anymore that that will really sell in Peoria. I don't think anyone can accept that explanation. If the body isn't there, and the minutes exist that Earl Warren had them destroyed, that will be another twist, and it will open up the whole story again. I covered at least 45 instances where the Warren Commission knew that Lee Harvey Oswald was in one place when somebody impersonating him was in another place. So we can't say that there's new information now that they didn't have at the time. That is the value of the book that I'm doing on the doubles, to show that the government knew right away, even before they began taking testimony from witnesses, that Lee Harvey Oswald had many doubles impersonating him, and that they would be used to cover the assassination of the President of the United States. Our time is up. There's too much news every week. I can just barely cover the top stories and tell you what they are, and hopefully go into them in detail later. But in the meantime, save all those interesting articles you see and read them more carefully, because there is a lot going on right now that's very explosive. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. You keep well, and I'll be back with you next week. And take care. Have a good week.
Thank you, Mae.